Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Jason Polieff. Every week we review and preview the world of comics along with other facets of geek chic culture. Unfortunately, the other co-hosts are unable to join us. Justin is sick, and we weren't able to find anybody else on short notice, so it'll just be me this week. But we're going to go ahead and kick things off right away by going into All-Star Western number 2 from DC Comics. Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti wrote this with art by Moritat, and this was actually out last week, but they were out of stock when I went to go get it, so had to pick it up and read it for this week. It continues the story started in All-Star Western number 1. It's Dr. Arkham's viewpoint of Jonah Hex, and it takes place in Gotham, which, since Gotham's on the East Coast, I'm wondering why it's an All-Star Western. But it does have the elements of a Western town. You know, it's a new city. They're still building it up. And, of course, Jonah Hex, you know, character from DC's past in the Western universe, makes a wonderful appearance here and actually is kind of the primary protagonist, although it's viewed through Dr. Arkham's eyes. So you do still have that Western feel. The comic is actually selling it at $3.99, which is above the $2.99 line that DC originally was drawing for their books before their relaunch. Now, I know we complained last week about, you know, Justice League having just some extra pages but no actual story and this chart being charged more money. You actually get extra story in this book. They have a second feature, and that is actually a wonderful little story that's going to continue on through the next couple of books. So if they do keep the $3.99 price point, it may actually be worth it because you are getting a number of extra pages and extra story because they do have that backup story in here. It's not just the standard story that they're telling. And that story was also written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. And that one's kind of nice because, you know, this being the October issue, it actually has a variant of zombies going on in that backup story, which is caused by ancient Native American magic affecting and bringing back the dead on this town that's cursed. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And, you know, did the town actually cause this for themselves, or, where is there going to be a twist in this? Because I don't think it's going to be just a straight up zombies are attacking story. There's going to be something else in there. But back to the main story arc. Yeah. At the end of the first issue, Jonah Hex and Dr. Arkham have discovered a secret society. And so this deals with what they're going to do. Who can they report this to? Because it's a society that's been built up throughout the entirety of Gotham and all the upper classes. You know, it's a giant conspiracy of organized crime. So it's kind of interesting to see how the city that Batman is trying to fight and clean up, the corruption goes all the way back to the 1800s when the city was being founded and really built into the massive metropolis that it becomes. And the crime is built there from the beginning. In fact, it even references the Crime Bible, which if you were reading DC before the relaunch, the Crime Bible is brought up throughout the DC universe towards the end of there as the reason why there's so much evil, and it's a religion based on evil. So it's interesting to see those threads being pulled throughout. And it'll also be interesting to see with the reboot what new things they're introducing us to in this version of Gotham will be pulled into the current versions of Detective Comics, Batman, and even Nightwing, Birds of Prey, and other books that take place in Gotham City. So I really enjoyed this book. I really enjoy Justin and Jimmy's writing and want to see where this is going to go. So, you know, I'll probably be picking up issue number 3 when that comes out next month. Yeah. Green Lantern, The New Guardians is also put out by DC Comics. Tony Bedard wrote this with Tyler Kirkham doing the art. And this continues the story of the rings from all of the other cores. In DC, they've got the Green Lantern Corps, but they also have the Sapphire, the Red Lanterns, the Yellow Lanterns, the Indigo Tribe, and Orange doesn't even have a tribe, it's just a single ring. So these rings have come and sought out Kyle Rayner for some higher purpose. And you know, by the end of the book, he's done something that we actually thought Hal would do it prior to the reboot when they're introducing all the different cores for the Battle of Light and the Darkest Night episode. We actually expected Hal to be donning a ring from every core and possibly wield a ring from every core, and it's going to be happening in the New Guardians. But why are these rings seeking out Kyle? Does this have something to do with why he was originally chosen as the Green Lantern and then later became Ion, who was the Scion for the Green Lanterns? Unfortunately, this is all history that happened in the old DC Universe, and they're carrying it over into the relaunch of the book. Now, you don't really need to know all of that history, but it certainly makes it a much richer, deeper experience when reading this book. And you know, they give you a brief summary of how he begins, which was, as we talked about when issue one came out, it got a little confusing that it was actually a summary of how Kyle was chosen, and then jumping forward in time to the current arc. But this takes place all in the current time arc, so there is no back and forth. You don't have to worry about that. But it does make it that had been an interesting point to start this off with selecting Kyle, and now all the other rings are selecting Kyle for one reason or another. Yeah, Ganthet had actually chose Kyle, which is very unusual. Normally, the ring chooses its next bearer, which makes sense with the rings from the other cores coming to find Kyle, except for the fact that they currently had masters. Normally, the master of a ring has to give it up or be deceased in order for it to seek out a new master. In this case, those rings just quit and came to Kyle. Hopefully Tony's got a great story worked up as to why those rings are coming at him. It looks good. It's a good read. I'm really enjoying it, and I can't wait for the next issue to come out. The one thing I'm noticing with the Green Lantern books is it looks like they're kind of preparing for some sort of a crossover between the three of them. There's little strings tied here and there, and it'll be very nice if they do a good job with the crossover that you can continue reading just the book that you're reading, but if you're reading all three, you'll get a larger overarching story arc, but you won't really miss anything by not having read the other two Green Lantern books or other DC comic books. And that's one of the hallmarks I think that makes a great crossover. And speaking of great crossovers, G.I. Joe Cobra came out this week, and this is written by Mike Costa, and Werther Delendre is doing the art for this. And this book, it's really interesting because when they did the original G.I. Joe Cobra miniseries that actually sold so well, that was why they determined to turn it into a regular ongoing series. When they wrote that book, it was about Chuckles as an undercover agent in the Cobra organization and how he was infiltrating and working his way up through the ranks. Now they've actually turned that on its head, and they've got sleeper agents inside G.I. Joe. So while the G.I. Joe Cobra Civil War, which is that crossover I mentioned, is going on, you've got sleeper agents, and the book leaves you wondering, is there going to be more sleeper agents? You know, who can we really trust? So, you know, and they're being ballsy, and they're actually taking known characters that have been around for a long time in G.I. Joe. They're not, well, usually when they kill off a character, they create a character just for that purpose. You go, wait, I've never heard that character's name. And then they kill them, and so that you never really grow to care about those characters. They do have a couple of new characters that they've introduced, so you're going, oh wait, I've never heard that name. But they've also got, yeah, a couple of characters that have been around since the original G.I. Joe line came out. And so if you're fans of G.I. Joe, you hear these names and you're going, oh well, they can't possibly do anything to this guy, he's been around forever. And then they kill him, or you know, they take them out of action. They've been doing a lot of stuff like that. You know, the one term that came was brought up to me was plot armor. And so they've taken away a lot of plot armor from some of the main characters. And I think part of that is also because these books aren't as tied to the toys as they were back when the G.I. Joe was being published by Marvel. I mentioned that with the Larry Hama G.I. Joe: A Real American Hero books. You can see where he's not as worried about having to keep characters alive for their next incarnation as a toy. And G.I. Joe Cobra, as well as G.I. Joe, the ongoing, and G.I. Joe Snake Eyes all take that into account. and they're willing to kill off characters that have been around for a long time. Now, again, this is a crossover as to who's going to be the next Cobra Commander, which keeps it intriguing. And, you know, this is great as a spy story to see, you know, the spy working inside G.I. Joe. How is he trying to keep from getting caught? You know, who's on to him? You know, how? So, you know, it really is a nice story. And, you know, the other thing that's going on in the background is the candidates for the Cobra Commander position. Baroness Major Blood, you've got Saemot of the Crimson Twins, if you remember Tomax and Saemot. Yeah. They're all viable candidates for the next Cobra Commander. They've even got a couple of characters that we haven't, that you were introduced for the book, that are candidates for Cobra Commander. And they may, one of the unknowns may also get it. It's not necessary, in fact, it probably will be, because you can't necessarily have one of the favorite. It would be very interesting to see Tomax take over as the role, because then he wouldn't be running the business arm of Cobra. He would actually be the commander, and you have to find a replacement. So it'll be interesting to see where that dynamic goes. I don't think they're scared of changing that dynamic. Yeah, they could put Baroness as the commander, and I don't think they would be scared of losing that one character. In fact, it would kind of be ballsy, because now they've put a woman in charge. Yeah, and, you know, traditionally the commander has been a hero. And of course, there's still Serpentor slinking around in the background, adding moral support to all of the candidates. So it'll be interesting to see where he comes from when the board of Cobra decides to name their next commander. And of course, yeah, none of these people cares for each other, so we might just see them slitting each other's throats as they fight their way to become the next commander. The book will keep you guessing. Yeah, there are a couple of characters that are starting to show off as being main characters, but I still wouldn't put it past them to make them main characters and then get rid of them later on. They've done that with some of the previous runs on G.I. Joe, now that they don't have to stay as tied to the cartoon, tied to the toys, and they know that they're writing for a more mature audience that grew up reading these books. From Marvel, we've got The Ultimates. Now, this, of course, takes place in the Marvel Ultimates universe, different from the main Marvel continuity universe. Of course, Nick Fury is now leading the Avengers-style team of the Ultimates. Now, you've got Captain America, Thor, Hawkeye, Black Widow, Iron Man. You know, your traditional Avengers crew is in place here, with Nick Fury acting as strategic commander. But they're all, you know, slight variations because they're living in the Ultimates universe, which became a much more gritty, more realistic, is how a lot of people like to describe the Ultimates universe. It's certainly much more modern of a universe of how these characters would have evolved in a more modern time than in the traditional Marvel universe, where they've been around since the 60s and had a whole continuity of stuff that went on there that's brought them to current, that's still part of their characters. I enjoyed this book. It took me a little by surprise, because it starts off with Nick Fury kind of down on himself and going, we've been defeated. How did I get defeated? What do we do next? It wasn't that self-confident, self-assured. And I think, you know, Jonathan Hickman, the writer here, may have been trying to show just how dominant this enemy that they're facing is, which I think is important when you're dealing with a book like The Ultimates. You've got the Earth's Mightiest Heroes. You need an enemy that's going to be able to make it worthy for those people to be, make it worthy that the enemy needs this type of assault on them. You know, Thor is a god. If you've got Thor going after somebody, he probably doesn't need much help to take them down. So you need to have ways of establishing that the people that you're fighting are badass and do need more than just Thor or just Iron Man. More than just these top-tier, you know, superheroes coming after them, you need a whole team of them. And I think with, you know, it did kind of throw me for a loop. I wasn't exactly happy to see Nick Fury kind of going, what do I do now? But he got over that pretty quick, started calling the shots again, and advancing, became the Nick Fury that's always in control, always in command. And so I think that may have been trying to hint at just how powerful and help push that story arc through. But it was kind of disappointing to start off a comic and see, you know, that the guy who knows everything and is always planning for every contingency didn't have a contingency plan, was up against a wall. So, but then again, that could just be my love for the character, and, you know, and Hickman did a good job with that twist in the story, even though it's just so minor and so small, just a couple of panels of Nick feeling defeated. That probably was the point of it, and made the enemy that much more dangerous, which is important. And you know, this book, you know, you've got S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Ultimates going up and throwing everything they got against this futuristic community, and they're not doing anything. So, you know, when they finally, you know, Nick Fury has to call a retreat so they can regroup and try and figure out a new attack plan. And, you know, this really is a setup issue. And, you know, at the end, it leaves you with the wonderful moment of, okay, what's going to happen now? Because Thor has decided he needs to go kick some ass. He's tired of, you know, these people have come to Earth. They've taken the Odin power, which is the power of Asgard and controlled by Thor's father, Odin. And they've disconnected, you know, Midgard or Earth from the tree that supports Asgard. And they've absorbed that power, and they're using that power against the Ultimates. And we still don't really know what the end game is for this civilization that's evolved. So it'll be interesting to see what is their end game, why are they taking over, you know, and how. And again, they've created this dominant enemy. How do the Ultimates and Nick Fury overcome this enemy? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, Hickman's doing a good job, and Asad Ribic is doing the art in there, and the art was beautiful. So, yeah, again, yeah, this week was actually a real good week. I didn't have any books that really let me down, anything that made me feel, I wish I hadn't gotten that, or I'm not so sure about where this is headed. Yeah, I really enjoyed all the books I read this week, and I think Captain America and Bucky might have been my favorite book of the week. Ed Brubaker and Mark Andreyko wrote this book with Chris Samnee doing the art. I loved the art in this book. It felt like you were back in 1943 in the war, 1944. Yeah. And it, even though the art had a modern twist on it, it still felt like you were back there, felt like you were back at the war with Bucky, with Toro. And again, they're dealing with, this is great in that it's a one-shot. You know, they've done a couple of one-shots for the Captain America Bucky. And you get to see what makes Bucky tick. Why is he always doing what he's doing? And it really shows Bucky striving and trying to prove himself to be the best that he can be, to be better than others. Bucky really is trying to prove himself to everybody around him. And Cap is the only one that really believes in him. You know, we talked about Namor finally giving in at the previous issue and saying, you know what, you're okay by me. You know, and Toro, of course, is Bucky's age, and he understands and kind of feels the same way as Bucky, that they need to prove themselves. But he doesn't have that, I have to prove myself, the same way that Bucky does, because Toro can turn into a flaming human, just like the Human Torch, who is Toro's partner. So, having to prove himself, Bucky and Toro head off to rescue a prisoner and wind up at a concentration camp, and they have to break in, rescue the prisoner, and while they're doing this, Bucky realizes the horror that he's surrounded by. The camp full of all these people that are dying, that haven't eaten a real meal in days or months even, you know, because they're just essentially walking skeletons, right? Well, they don't call it Auschwitz. They call it something very close, and you really get the feel that that's what they were going for, is Auschwitz or similar type concentration camp. And you see just how outraged Bucky is at this. Now, it's important to notice just how outraged Bucky is, because that's going to take a big hit when they bring into the next arc. This actually makes me a bit sad, because it's the end of the World War II stories that they're telling with Bucky and from Bucky's point of view. And maybe in the future issues they'll get back to it, but they've already said next issue they're starting the Winter Soldier era, when Bucky was serving the Russian government as a top secret soldier. You know, the Russian government are the ones that gave Bucky his robotic arm, and he served them as a top secret hidden agent. And it's going to be interesting to see how he went from this kid who was so horrified at what he saw in a concentration camp to the acts that he's going to do as an assassin, and you know, possible, you know, torture, and you know, just very despicable things I can see coming up in Bucky's future. So it'll, I think that's really what they're trying to get, is that contrast of just how caring Bucky is when he's in this concentration camp, and then having to go out and perform these acts as the Winter Soldier. Now, of course, the Russians have brainwashed him, and he's under mind control, so he doesn't understand what he's doing. He's just following orders, and that's not an excuse. And they actually deal with that in the trial of Bucky in Captain America a couple issues back. You know, Bucky as Cap goes on trial for the crimes he committed as the Winter Soldier, and he understands that it can't just be, I was following orders. And, you know, when he was the Winter Soldier, he is brainwashed. He has access to all the skills and training, but he doesn't have the same mind or the same, you know, thought processes. He's not the caring person that he is, that they've established him to be. But they have established, you know, that attitude of, I can do this, I'm just as good as Cap or Toro or Namor, any of these people I've been fighting beside, I'm just as good as every soldier out here on the line, and I can do this job. And so that will carry through as the Winter Soldier, I think. It'll be interesting to see where that story arc goes. This is great in that it is an over, you can definitely see overarching story arcs and that character development that I'm talking about cutting through, even though the stories are one and dones. Yeah. Here's a story. If you pick up this issue of Captain America and Bucky, it was good. Yeah, you don't, I had a story, I've enjoyed it. I don't have to pick up the book before or the book after to understand what's going on, where this is going. Yeah, with the Ultimates, you need to have picked up Ultimates number one. Yeah, read that, read Ultimates number two to understand what's going on here in Ultimates number three this week. Whereas with Captain America and Bucky, you could pick up, you know, 623, which is this week's issue. You could pick up 621, 622. They'll all make sense on their own. You don't have to read them 1, 2, 3. But when you do, there is this overarching story, this character that's being developed throughout these, that's really fun to read about. And Brubaker's been doing an amazing job with Captain America. I've loved his run since he started off on the book. And he brought Bucky back. He revealed that Bucky was the Winter Soldier, this top secret thing that everybody kind of heard whispers about but didn't know what it was. And he's the one that killed Captain America, brought Cap back, had Bucky serving as Captain America. Brubaker's done an amazing job on this run. And he's still knocking it out of the park. Captain America and Bucky is one of my favorite books that I'm reading now, and I don't see myself dropping it anytime soon. Last week we had mentioned that we would be talking about a book, Persepolis, by Marjane Satrapi. Unfortunately, since Justin is out sick, I'm going to wait for him to get back so we can actually have a discussion between the two of us on this. We both read it. I will say, you know, if you see it, pick it up. But for our full review, go ahead and tune in next week. This week, I'm going to go ahead and keep it short since it's just me. You've heard my voice plenty. But, you know, Justin should be feeling better and back next week. So feel free to contact us. Yeah, you can find us at the website, thecomicbooknerd.com. And you can go ahead and follow us on Twitter at @acomicbooknerd. You can follow Justin at FelixTCat. That's cat with a K and two T's. And I'm at JPolieff. You can contact us by email. The email address is comicbooktesseract@gmail.com. And you can also text us or leave us a voicemail at 50Tesseract. That's 508-377-3722. Once again, I've been Jason Polieff, and I'll Be back here next week to discuss more comics and other facets of geeky culture with you next week. Till then, stay safe, enjoy your comics.